Hi, this is Paul. I've highlighted some videos from Ready to Harvest in before, and I actually picked this one up when I saw Jacob touching it, Jacob and Sam, and I'm going to include some of Sam's comments on this because they very much echo my own understanding. But he did a video on orthodoxy in America, and one of the interesting things is that in this little corner, a lot of people sort of have the perception, and this is often perception, that orthodoxy is just running away. Look at how many subscribers Jonathan Peugeot has, and look at Jay Dyer, and go down to St. Andrews in Riverside, and look at the floors, and look at the mosaics, and look at the money they're putting into that church, and look at the empire they're building. And you would just think that orthodoxy is just exploding on the American scene. And yes and no. And we're going to run through some of the numbers here.
Christianity in America is changing. The Protestant denominations known as the mainline have been declining for over half a century now. And in the meantime...
Now, this mainline decline is, to me, one of the most super interesting stories. Nate had a conversation with a game designer, really interesting conversation. And he brought up something that I didn't know about. This is a piece from, the guy actually had a few of the details. This is a piece from Monday, March 16, 1942, from Time magazine. Now, that's before Time really reached its ascendance in terms of power in American culture. But what's amazing is this, the main line, this was Christian nationalism. This was the original Christian nationalism. And you had this group. And now, March of 1942, you have to remember, these were dark, dark days for the Allies. There were questions whether or not England was going to make peace with Nazi Germany, basically leaving all of Western Europe in Nazi hands. Churchill was just so stubborn, he wouldn't agree to any of it. And of course, the United States was just in the war. Churchill was now very excited. But, you know, you have to understand that when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, they also took the Philippines. And Kings and Generals channel for a while, I think they put the everyday World War II videos, every week World War II videos, I think, behind their paywall because they just weren't getting that many views. But it was a really cool series. And March of 1942, these were dark days for the Allies. And this is a point I wanted to make because people often sort of look at Western Christendom, let's say the Catholic nations, and say, well, the Catholics had so much political power, the Pope had so much political power. What happened in America was that these mainline churches had so much political power, and this political power didn't... The power of the church as institution basically went down, but the ethos of the mainline deeply secularized and became basically the way America is. These are the high spots of an organized U.S. Protestantism, super Protestant new program for a just and durable peace after World War II. So even in the dark days, they're already looking past the Second World War. Ultimately, a world government of delegated powers. So right there, the United Nations. And if you ever read the United Nations Charter on Human Rights, you'll see it's just mainline Protestantism all the way through. Complete abandonment of U.S. isolationism. And so the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor, now we're going to have basically a mainline Christian imperialism. The United States is going to promote throughout the world its brand of world order. Some immediate limitations on national sovereignty. Wow. International control of all armies and navies. Wow. I mean, this is empire. Worldwide freedom of immigration. So open borders. Progressive elimination of all tariffs and quota restrictions on world trade. Now, what's interesting is you look at this package and you look at how it sort of migrated through the 20th century. Sometimes these were Republican points. Sometimes these were Democratic points. But it sort of shifted hands. But it all comes out of the American mainline church. Autonomy for all subjects and colonial peoples, with much better treatment for Negroes in the U.S. So The civil rights movement was very much on their agenda, of course. Martin Luther King Jr., his education was very much in mainline neo-orthodoxy, if you read his theological works before he really became a thing. No punitive reparations, no humiliating decrees of war guilt, no arbitrary dismemberment of nations. Now, of course, they would have to deal with the communists, and they're not, 1942, they're not really understanding the role that the Soviet Union is going to play in the setup for the Cold War. But again, the idea is we are going to be winsome to Germany and Japan and bring them into the fold of nations as best we can. A democratically controlled international bank to make development capital available to all parts of the world without the predatory and imperialistic aftermath so characteristic of large-scale private and governmental loans. Now, again, America had always had sort of an anti-imperial ethos because it had been a colony, but its own brand of imperialism was always sort of implicit imperialism. And, of course, the Cold War, which would change some of that. This program was adopted last week by 375 appointed representatives of 30-odd denominations called together at the Ohio Wesleyan University by the Federal Council of Churches. Every local Protestant church in the country will be urged to get behind the program. As Christian citizens, its sponsors affirmed, we must seek to translate our beliefs into practical realities and to create a public opinion which will ensure that the United States shall play its full and essential part in the creation of a moral way of international living. Among the 375 delegates who drafted the program were 15 bishops of 5 denominations, seven seminary heads including Yale, Chicago, Princeton, Colgate, Rochester, 8 college and university presidents including Princeton's Harold W. Dodds, practically all the ranking officials of the Federal Council, and a group of well-known laymen including J.R. Mott, Irving Fisher, Harry S. Firestone Jr., intellectually, said Methodist Bishop Ivan Lee Holt of Texas, this is the most distinguished American church gathering I have seen in 30 years of conference going. The meeting showed its temper early by passing a set of 13 requisite principles for peace submitted by the chairman, John Foster Dulles, Google his name, and his interchurch commission to study the basis of just and durable peace. These principles, far from putting all the onus on Germany or Japan, bade the U.S. give thought to the short-sighted selfishness of its own policies after World War I, declared that the U.S. would have to turn over a new leaf if the world is to enjoy lasting peace. And then it goes on. I'll put the link to this below. It is a fascinating document. But again, back to the mainline church. This was the establishment church in America. And then, of course, Roosevelt was in lockstep with many in the Federal Council of Churches who said, we have to bring the Catholics and the Jews into the fold. And what that meant was, and there's some interesting articles about how this sort of played in terms of the Second World War and chaplaincies, that chaplaincies were supposed to be fairly generic and, go easy on the Jesus stuff, okay, especially with the Jews. So, yeah, this mainline church's institution that very much was an implicit state church in America has basically been falling through the floor. Now, that doesn't mean its ideas have fallen through the floor. It just means that institutionally, it sort of drifted from church into just a purely political secularism.
Time, non-denominational churches have appeared on the scene and quickly ascended. Catholics and evangelicals are more slowly becoming a smaller percentage in America.
This is Ryan Burge's article in Christianity Today. It's a chart I use all the time. It's a great little chart.
As the number of people who don't claim any religion at all rises.
Now, the rise of the nuns in some ways is, well, what do we need these mainline churches for when we have government to be our church for us?
But in the religious scene, it's easy to overlook.
There's the Reformed Church in America. There's the CRC. A lot of people forget that Salvation Army is a church. PCUSA. There's the PCA. Assemblies of God. So National Baptist Convention. Where's the Southern Baptist? They got to be there. They're a biggie.
Look, one group of churches, a group that has not been as well known in the West as the Episcopalians, Baptists, and Pentecostals, despite being older than all of them. I'm speaking of the Eastern Orthodox churches. Don't confuse these churches with the Oriental Orthodox, like Coptic or Armenian churches, which I'll be discussing in another video. Who we're talking about includes the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America.
Now, what's distinguishing them from the Oriental churches? There's some theological distinctions, but also notice they're European. Okay.
Orthodox Church in America and Antiochian Orthodox Christian Archdiocese of North America. The reason why the Orthodox are often overlooked in the discussion of American Christianity is that their numbers have historically been very low.
And you said, well, very low. Well, how low?
There's 25 religious groups larger than Orthodoxy in America. It makes sense why it's going to take some effort to get recognition.
There's numbers like 25. You know, it's kind of a nice even number that everybody says, oh, top 25.
And that's around where Orthodoxy in America lands. According to the 2020...
And now this is a very interesting list. Notice Catholic Church with almost 62 million adherents. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean... These are people who would identify, I'm sure, as... in the U.S. religious census, these who identify as Catholic. It doesn't mean they're actually attending church. Non-denominational is now the second group. They've pulled ahead of Southern Baptists. But if let's say you add non-denominationals are sort of like Baptist without the Baptist word in it to scare people away. But you've combined these two groups together. I mean, you have almost 40 million people. United Methodists, of course, they've been in the news a lot because they're breaking down and fracturing. Mormon, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, sixth. Muslim estimate. You know, that's sixth on the list. That's not small. Although, of course, if you add up all of these groups and then look at the 4 million, it's pretty small. Evangelical Lutheran Church, another mainline church. Assemblies of God, Pentecostal Church. Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, a sect, basically described a sect because of their deficient view of the Trinity. National Missionary Baptist Convention, another Baptist group. Lutheran Missouri Synod, slightly more conservative Lutherans, generally speaking, Episcopal Church, another mainline church. But now the historic mainlines, you have the United Methodist, you have the Episcopal Church, you have some Northern Baptists, but the Presbyterian Church, Church of Christ, Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, and then now you've got American Baptist, really another mainline group, more liberal and progressive group the American Baptists tend to be. Seventh-day Adventist, who are, you know, increasingly fairly evangelical. African Methodist Episcopal Church, historical African-American denomination. Orthodox Judaism, number 20 on the list, just under a million. United Church of Christ, Church of God in Christ, Church of the Nazarene, Church of God Cleveland, Tennessee, and then Hindu temples, 831,000, all Eastern Orthodox combined, 675,000. So the Christian Reformed Church, as it's been shrinking, the Christian Reformed Church at its peak in 1992 was about 320,000, I think. So the Christian Reformed Church was half the size of all Orthodox churches combined. And that'll give you a sense of just how small it is. Then Reformed Judaism. Yeah, interesting list.
U.S. religion census, all Eastern Orthodox adherents combined fall behind 25 other religious groups in the rankings. And when you divide them out, the largest Eastern Orthodox church in America, the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese, is only number 34. There's over six times more Muslims in America than Eastern Orthodox, and some denominations that most...
That's a big number.
Americans aren't familiar with, like the Christian and Missionary Alliance, are larger than the largest Orthodox bodies.
Phil Visser and Sky Jatani, Christian Missionary Alliance.
But that's no surprise to most Orthodox people in America. People aren't becoming Orthodox because they want to be part of the biggest church, but people are becoming Orthodox.
Now right away, and I've talked about this distinction before, you have the immigrants and you have the converts. Okay, and those are, and he's going to go into those numbers a little bit. This is a super interesting video.
Anyone paying attention to the American Christians?
Hank Hanegraaff. I believe he used to be Christian Reformed, went Orthodox.
Seen online can't help but notice that there has been a vocal and enthusiastic group of people converting to the faith. Nearly every month, a new video appears on YouTube that gets tens of thousands of views discussing another person's journey to Orthodox Christianity.
Now, I read that piece about the Catholics, and it talked about online Catholics. That's at least as true as Orthodox. And there's something really interesting about that. I don't understand it, but there's something really interesting about that. I mean, the Orthodox have made really skilled use of social media.
A 2008 study found that 29% of Greek Orthodox were converts and 51% of the Orthodox Church in America were.
Okay, now let's look at those numbers. So 29% converts, 71% born in. So again, that's an ethnic immigrant church. America has a long history of ethnic immigrant churches, and those dynamics are actually fairly well known. And I imagine the dynamics with the immigrant churches are kind of the same. Sam's going to make some observations, and my observations are very much like Sam. I remember doing an event in one of our Christian Reformed churches here in the city and talking to a young man who grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church that was quite near the Christian Reformed church that we planted in that area. And, you know, he just loved his Christian Reformed church plant and really appreciated it, sort of a blend of old and new. And he just basically said something that was very typical of evangelicals, that it wasn't really until he came into sort of this, he didn't use that word evangelical, but really that much more personal relationship, the his Orthodox tradition felt to him stayed and sort of dead.
In the OCA, 56% of the clergy were also converts. I'd like to take a moment to let you know about an app that can help you. Ideas from Son can you go ahead and get. I believe that most of these converts are coming out of that core diocese's website. He says, I believe that most of these converts are coming out of that core 20% of their former churches. They are active, highly motivated people. They read, they think, they sing, and they serve. That hunger for more, that hunger for sound doctrine, is sending them to Orthodoxy.
And this is interesting because, yeah, we know these people. These people are watching my channel. These people are watching Bajot. These people are watching Peterson. These people come to the meetups. So, yeah, that's right. And, you know, kudos to the Orthodox Church, because some of you are the best kind of people. I mean, you are exactly the kind of people that churches love to get. And it's interesting that he mentioned the doctrine, because I wonder, I know for some it's the doctrine, because you don't join a church unless you're enthusiastic to one degree about the doctrine, but it's also, obviously, from listening to many of you, it's the practice.
These Orthodox converts are seeking mystery. They want a non-fundamentalist approach to the faith, but they are not fleeing the faith of the ages. They are trying to get back to the trunk of the tree. All around them are churches that are either modern, postmodern, post-postmodern, or post-post-postmodern.
Oh, you're gonna meta-modern? Come on, we got some language in the corner that you can do better than just adding posts to the modern.
The American converts are not looking for some kind of post-Vatican II carved-down liturgical experience.
No, they are not.
They have that all around them. They are not trying to cut the service down another 15 to 20 minutes so that more young people will hang around.
No, they are not down for that.
As if that would work. Speaking as a journalist, I can tell you that the lively, growing Roman parishes are not the ones that have cut the mass down to 45 minutes.
Right, they're the Latin mass. And again, what we're seeing is this swelling and desire for a muscular faith, for a crunchy faith, for a demanding faith, and, you know, a steep slope faith.
You see, the people who want to worship One of the trends in American journalism is to try to create newspapers for people who don't read. This seems to me to be somewhat contradictory. Similarly, there are many churches that are creating worship services for people who do not want to go to worship services. The Orthodox converts are not interested in those churches. Also, the converts want their children to be Orthodox. They are looking for churches that will offer their children a winsome living faith that they will want to follow.
Now, it's going to be super interesting to see really what happens to their children, because it's going to be super interesting because culture is strong, and it's one thing to, if you grew up in a fundamentalist household, your parents wanted you to do the same thing, and they were doing all of the angling to try to make sure that you would stay in their fundamentalist. I mean, I think about Richard Roland and, you know, all of the, maybe you shouldn't have let C.S. Lewis. I mean, the evangelicals let C.S. Lewis into the fold. It's like, do you really know what you're letting into the fold? Now what's super interesting here, now one of you just, and so thank you on this. So, you get a gold star for colonizing. I won't mention your name, but you sent me the email, and it was a good one. Of course, it's from NPR, who, of course, if American Orthodoxy has its radio, NPR is the radio of the church formerly known as the Mainline. If you've been following the series, by now you've seen me write about the reason this whole project came about. I don't know what I believe. Don't misunderstand. I am a grown woman who has lived a lot of life at this point, and I have learned some things, and I have uncovered some deep truths about the world and myself, and for that matter. But when it comes to questions of faith, I don't have it figured out. The religion my parents brought me up with doesn't fit anymore, but I still long for spiritual community. According to the academic types who study social trends, there's a name for someone like me, a nun. As in, when it comes to religious identity, well, I have none. You're part of the religion formerly known as the Mainline. According to the study, and then they talk about the rise of the nuns, blah, 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 blah. So there's something going on. America's getting less churchy. Yeah, and at the same time, some really intense churchiness. Perry and I both grew up in really religious households. Both of our parents preached at the pulpit on Sundays. Both of our fathers preached at the pulpit on Sundays. Ministers' kids. And going to church was never an option. It was just what we did, what was expected of us. But like me, Perry has grown away from the church he grew up in. His family's Black charismatic church doesn't reflect the totality of his values anymore. He started feeling distant from his faith when he left home in Louisiana, Kentucky, to start college at Yale. It was in New Haven, Connecticut. Yeah, that's where Yale is. So there weren't a lot of Black charismatic churches to go to. So I probably went to church like one out of every three Sundays. If you don't go to church on a Sunday during that time, did you feel unmoored in any way, or did it get eaten up real quick? I was very aware that someone was not quite right. There was some level of guilt. I know where I am supposed to be, and I'm not there. And so again, what's interesting is that, and of course the same things comes up. We're welcoming everyone, but we would not do a same-sex wedding. Is that good enough for you? So he seemed to know exactly what I was thinking. He actually said we would not put that on a website, so the goal is obscure. So I was struggling at church, and we were moving forward to Louisiana, to Louisville anyway. So they get to the end of it. Bacon. I don't think I'm being unreasonable. I'm getting close to accepting that the church I want to go to could exist, but maybe doesn't exist currently. And it's interesting because the Mainline is out there saying, "Oh, come on, you know, we're not gonna make you confessional in anything, and we have all the same values you have. Why don't you come here?" And rather than invest in a church that I might leave in another 10 years, I think I might take some time thinking about how we build a community of people with shared values. And that's kind of where it goes. I'm asking myself, what are the ways to educate Charlotte about these values? What are the ways to make sure we're living to those values ourselves? In other words, I pick the values, and I'm going to go pick a church that sort of will reinforce my values. I'm looking for kind of a religious service provider. So I'm thinking about answering those questions. I'm open to the idea that answers might not come through a place that's open from 10 to 12 on Sunday. So, but, you know, my one appearance on Unbelievable when Justin Brierley was there was with a guy who was basically saying, we should be killing it right now. We have these non-confessional religious communities and not really religious. You don't have to believe in God, but we have the values, yada, 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 and nobody bothers to go. Recently in The Atlantic, there was a very interesting article, What Really Happens When Americans Stop Going to Church? And you know what happens? They keep the same values that they left church with, and they just sort of keep with their political alignment. In other words, if they leave a conservative church, they tend to be more conservative with politics. Part of the point of the article is that what churches actually do is moderate people's political perspectives. And so that when they leave, because of course you've got religion and you've got this broader mix of values that won't necessarily get really pointed and sharp, even despite all of the panic you tend to see in the mass media about conservative churches. The truth is that churches overall moderate people's religious posture more than they tend to intensify them. I guess there's a new book out called The Great Dechurching by Jim Davis and Michael Graham. I might have to pick it up. I buy too many books. And here they say it. Without a church community, in many cases, the nation's political system becomes their church, and the results are polarizing. They bring whatever moral and social values they acquire from their church experience and then apply those values to the political sphere with an evangelical zeal. For many of those leaving church traditions that place a strong emphasis on concern for the poor and marginalized, the values they retain from church translate into socially liberal political positions. Davis and Graham found that the de-churched Christians who came from liberal mainline Protestant and Catholic traditions were likely to be political progressives. A quick glance at the politics of historically Catholic but no longer heavily churched area of the country bear this out. Whether inside or outside of church, evangelicals in conservative regions of the country have lined up to support gun rights and restrictive immigration policies, even though those stances run directly counter to the official views of several mainline Protestant denominations, as well as the statements of American Catholic bishops. My own analysis of the general social survey has suggested that white Southerners who identify as Christian but do not attend church are overwhelmingly conservative in their attitudes on race and social welfare. A majority of Southern white Christians who never attend church or attend only once a year also support restrictive abortion laws. Many are liberal or libertarian on matters of personal liberty, such as marijuana and premarital sex, but they're still strongly conservative on issues of race, gender, and Christian nationalism. Dread Christian nationalism. Only half a century ago, Christian denominations acted as politically centrist forces. Southern Baptists, such as Jimmy Carter and Al Gore and Bill Clinton, ran politically moderate campaigns that appealed to fellow church members on both sides, on both the right and the left. A devout Catholic, such as then-Senator Joe Biden, could still combine relatively moderate positions on abortion with liberal-leaning Catholic social ethics to win Catholic voters, but those days are disappearing. Denominations and church commitments often preserve a set of broadly shared Christian and moral values that transcend the right-left divide, but now that some of the loudest supporters of Dread Christian nationalism have left these denominations behind, there's little to stop them from refashioning the Christian faith in their own image. But again, what we're seeing in the Orthodox, what we're seeing in the Orthodox is really a transformation that many of these people, at least from what I've seen, it's a dramatic change in life. It's not at all what Burge and Williams are writing about. I don't know why this tab is so slow.
If the Orthodox Church is seeing a steady stream of converts, although small right now, they're on the right path, right? Well, let's look at the numbers first, and then we can decide. Along with the 2020 U.S. Religion Census was the Census of Orthodox Christian Churches, and the coordinator, Alexei Krindich, provided a detailed report with charts showing how things look. First, let's familiarize ourselves with the size of the various churches. The Greek Orthodox are...
Now, again, it's nice to sort of slow this down. His videos go by fast. Greek Orthodox is by far the largest group. 375,000. Orthodox Church in America, 74,000. That's tiny. That's a third of the Christian Reformed Church. Antiochian Orthodox Christian Archdiocese, 71,000. Serbian, 59,000. Russian Orthodox, 23,000. Macedonian Orthodox, 17,000. Ukrainian Orthodox, 14,000. Moscow, 10,000. American Carpatho-Russian Diocese, 7,000. Romanian Orthodox, 6,400. Church of Genuine Orthodox Christians. Yeah, a little divided.
Archdiocese is far and away the largest group, with over 375,000 adherents. Number two, the Orthodox Church in America has just off. Adherents, the Orthodox Church in America actually pushes out the Greek Orthodox to take the number one spot here with 559
parishes. Now, this is number of parishes and mission parishes in 2020. So, obviously, the Orthodox Church in America is growing rapidly. And now has more parishes than the Greek Orthodox, and what that means, of course, since the Greek Orthodox is only about 74,000 and Greek Orthodox 375,000, there could be a ton of nominal Greek Orthodox, and you would expect that from an immigrant church. It also means that the Orthodox Church in America congregations are tiny.
Parishes. So unsurprisingly, in Krindich's chart showing the number of adherents in a typical median church, we see that the churches under the Greek Archdiocese have 350 and the OCA is down at only 95. Note that the census also counted a couple small true Orthodox.
And he notes that all Eastern Orthodox churches combined average size about 150.
Churches which are not in communion with the mainstream of Eastern Orthodoxy. With that background, let's look at how the last decade fared.
And I think part of the reason that the Orthodox feel like they have a bigger footprint too are their buildings. I mean, you drive through and their buildings make a statement. So when we saw St. Andrew's in Riverside, yeah, it makes a statement. It actually was smaller than I thought. I looked around in the size and thought, you know, in terms of square footage, not that big. And, you know, talked about 700-800 people, obviously, a lot of them standing outside.
For Eastern Orthodoxy. In fact, the overall numbers showed decline. From 2010 to 2020, the count of adherents dropped from 816,000 to 675,000, and regular attendees fell from 212,000 to 183,000.
So these are super interesting numbers because, you know, the Christian Reformed Church tends to keep a little tighter rein on its books. And so in terms of regular attendees, could very well be fewer people going to Eastern Orthodox churches on any given Sunday than are going to Christian Reformed churches. That really took me by surprise. Now, adherence, you've got a massive nominalism factor, where you've got adherents in 2010, 800,000, and regular attenders in 2010, 200,000. So that means the vast majority don't go to church. And you have a decline of, in just 10 years, of 14%.
A bright spot is that the number of parishes did increase from 1,957 to 2,014. So where is the decline?
So again, smaller mission churches.
Fine. All of the largest church bodies experienced it. The Greek Orthodox Archdiocese dropped by over 100,000 adherents. In absolute numbers, that number of people is actually larger than the entire size of any one of the other Orthodox groups. The OCA lost 12%. The Antiochian Church was down 5%. Serbians down 13%, and Rokor down 14%. There are some exceptions, however. The Macedonian diocese saw an 11% increase, and the Bulgarians increased by 60%.
And again, but you've got numbers that are really small, and so if you get a little immigration wave, that'll do it.
So how is it that Orthodoxy has seen this decline, while at the same time they celebrate conversions and have an outsized presence in many online discussions of American Christianity? let's revisit the last sentence from my quote of Mattingly's article. Also, the converts want their children to be Orthodox. They are looking for churches that will offer their children a winsome living faith that they will want to follow. This observation, keeping the children Orthodox, seems like the place we need to look to find the decline. If people are converting in and they are at least having kids at their replacement rate, then people must be leaving if there's a decline.
Now, this is a great little picture that they're showing here, because the parents coming into it, especially the parents who are converts, if both parents convert, because it's not always unusual that especially the guy is interested. And it was very interesting. I want to be really careful about what I say here, but the reaction to our visit to St. Andrews in Riverside surprised me. And even though, you know, majority of men went to the conference, some of the women who made that visit, they had a lot of bold things to say on the bus going back to, it was interesting. And again, of course, what about the kids? Hard to know.
On June 10, Ryan Burge, who studies denominational statistics and makes hundreds of graphs and charts to display the data, stated an observation on Twitter. If I've learned anything in looking at religion statistics, it's this. When it comes to growth, retention is easy and conversion is hard. The best indicator of the future size of a religion is not the number of missionaries it sends, but how many children are in the pews. So we ask, what is the retention rate of Orthodoxy?
And of course, the Christian Reformed Church is in real trouble in many places.
And the Pew Research Center has those statistics. In the 2014 Religious Landscape Study, they determined what percentage of people raised in different faiths still identified with it. Of those polled, 80% of those Americans raised Hindu were still Hindu.
Now, this is where things get interesting, because I would expect the vast majority of those Hindus are immigrants, as with Muslims. And so it's... whereas for Christians in America, Christianity is very much sort of a lifestyle choice, and it's not a culture. I mean, you're almost asking if people are Indian with Hindus, and to a certain degree, Muslims too. Again, For a while, I was watching that show Rami on Hulu, which was in North Jersey, which was just fascinating in terms of how he was processing Islam in America.
77% of the Muslims stayed Muslim. 75% of those raised in Judaism.
See, all three of these are both Muslims, so-so, religions and ethnicity combined. And that's not going to be true of Americans.
Some were retained. Historically Black Protestant, 70%.
And huge cultural, I mean, the Black church is different. The Black church is different in terms of how it plays culturally. You kind of don't leave, even if you're not attending.
Evangelical Protestant, 65%. Mormon, 64%. Catholic, 59%. Where does Orthodoxy fall in here? It's at 53%.
And again, I think, well, these are immigrants. It's too early to know what happens to the children of the Orthodox converts, especially given the fact that they have sort of embraced a steep cultural slope, not dissimilar to, it's been very interesting to see, again, converts like Richard Rowland, who in some ways they were having a deep, you know, a steep slope religion as homeschooling evangelicals, and they switched to a different one.
That's tied with unaffiliated people who stay unaffiliated.
And part of the commonality between, like, say, if you switch from a steep slope religion to another one is this very Protestant choosing. I mentioned many times that, you know, people are like, well, when are you going to convert to Orthodoxy? And I sometimes quip and say, for me to convert to Orthodoxy would be a very Protestant move. And maybe you can get a sense of what I mean by that.
ahead of three groups in the poll: mainline Protestants, who are cratering even faster, Buddhists, and Jehovah's Witnesses, who lose about two-thirds of those raised in the faith.
Now Buddhists are interesting because here in I know a lot of people, like Sam was talking about, you know, are these California Buddhists? I bet you a lot of them, you have Japanese, you have Vietnamese, a lot of these groups that it came out of Asia are Buddhist. You probably have some from India. So that would be different.
Terry Mattingly is aware of this too. In his article, he says, in many Orthodox churches across America, the average age of the parishioners is about the same as the average age of the people in mainline Protestant churches.
Again, probably immigrants.
Many Orthodox churches are having trouble retaining their young people, so they are seeking ways to stop the bleeding. But there's the rub. If you're not creating new faith, you will not retain the children of those who had the faith in the first place.
And that gets into... Boy, this question about faith transmission is so pertinent. Because it gets into the question about, okay, what is faith, and what is a religious life, and how does that work with all of the cultural permutations? Now, this gets interesting because, again, many have gone to Orthodoxy because they're looking for a steep slope, strenuous faith. But when they're thinking about how to make this intelligible and salient to their children, they don't want a steep slope for the children. They want to sort of move the slope out. They're not going, let's say, Rumspringa with respect to the Amish.
There are cradle Orthodox priests who are as on fire as any convert will be in their lifetimes. You see, this is not about ethnicity. We are not talking about the convert era, but a convert-friendly era. The worship in these churches will be in English, and the people, all the people, will be singing.
Okay. Why then, again, the rise in interest in the Latin Mass? There is an appetite. Part of what's going on in our culture is that there is a signal, steep slope is a signal of authenticity. It's a signal of commitment. What Americans, with our strange sort of cultural fetishization of rebellion, that creates this flag of authenticity for a steep slope faith. And again, if you're raising your children in that dynamic of we're going to gentle out the slope, but so that they're still very different from the world, boy, I've seen that dynamic in it's so tricky. And so, okay, you're going to do it in English. Are you lessening the slope?
We'll see lots of children, and chrismation rites and adult baptisms will not be strange, mysterious events.
But they went there for the strange mystery. That's the thing. So this is going to be a super interesting thing to watch over, and it's going to take 20 years. It's going to be a super interesting thing to watch over the next 20 years.
The list of their children who are headed off to church camp will be long. Some of these churches will have tight budgets, but they will be tight because they are struggling to cope with growth, not decline. You will find people being called to the priesthood, the diaconate, and other forms of service. Back in 2012, Peter Cahays, founding president of St. Anna's Greek Orthodox Church of Flemington, New Jersey, recognized the issue of retention among American Greek
Orthodox Archdiocese of America, Office of Interfaith Marriage.
Orthodox, saying, since 1922, with continuing immigration and with families spreading across America, over 300 churches were added. Yet, as the Greek-American population has grown into the millions, the number of religiously observant communicants has dropped significantly. Although the Greek-American population has grown extensively through immigrations and post-war baby boomer periods, there are fewer active Greek Orthodox today than in 1922, a period during which the overall American population has tripled.
One person who got mentioned was Eric Metaxas, and, you know, Eric Metaxas is an evangelical.
In 2022, Orthodox theologian, scholar, and professor John Panayiotou wrote the article, What happened? How did we get here? Where are we going? A master class in decline in Eastern Orthodox Church membership. In part, he said, I remember one senior clergyman opining to me that the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese was seeing a consistent annual plummet in the number of weddings it was doing. Hence, that was one of the reasons that the statistics were not being made available. Another reason for this non-publication was the decline in Orthodox Church's number of baptisms / chrismations to funerals ratio. One does not need to be a statistician to realize by mere observation that in most of our parishes, the numbers of funerals outweigh the numbers of baptisms / chrismations per year. Having said this, that is not to say that there are exceptions to this rule in the parishes where membership has grown, especially from converts to Protestantism and Roman Catholicism. Yet these numbers do not offset the state of decline overall.
And it's going to be interesting, too, to see converts from Protestantism and Catholicism. How many because with the rise of the nuns, you really want to start harvesting from some of those nuns.
Wall Street Journal article, Religion is on the Decline as More Adults Check None. The matter of declining church attendance and membership in America is highlighted as being one of the significant trends in American life.
And I think the fact that they check none is also because, again, of this issue of authenticity. That the only religion that has credibility has to have authenticity. And so that encourages steep slope religion, because if your religion, you know, like the article for NPR, if your religion is just sort of like, people are going to say, well, you know, I go to yoga, I have statues of Buddha in my house. I think Ash Wednesday, when they put that stuff on their head, I think that's kind of cool. And so Americans are sort of having this buffet type attitude towards religion. So this guy then provided suggestions. And what's interesting is when you look at them, a lot of it is, well, let's reduce the slope, even though the converts are coming in for the steep slope.
For reversing the decline. Number one, the church, through its ordained and lay leadership, need to be seen as having a relevance to its own flock.
Relevance, one of those key words.
In the greater community outside its walls. Number two, avoiding of extremism.
But people are converting because it's an extreme church. That's why they're coming. So, in other words, it's going to be kind of a bind because, and in some ways, the Christian Reformed Church has that bind too, because when you look at what a lot of the, let's say, some of the young conservative pastors coming into the denomination without Dutch last names, coming from other ethnic groups, they're, you know, they come for the doctrine. They come for how the CRC is different from the rest. And at the same time, the other sort of more liberal progressive forces want to sort of lessen the slope, while others want to steep. And the debate on same-sex marriage is exactly that. No, we need to have a steep slope. We need to have a hard line. We need to have defined confessional boundaries that are policed and maintained. And in terms of church growth, that's not a bad thing. But in terms of an established community that has been very slowly assimilating to the culture, they sort of pull back.
On one end, church presented as a totally secular institution, and on the other end, church as cauldron of religious extremism and fundamentalism of a variety of...
So in other words, let's moderate and play the middle.
...ideologies. Number three, the basic mission of the local church is to preach the gospel and to help those in their times of need.
Which, at least any evangelical church will say.
Number four, the local church needs to understand and maintain its priorities. The local church, first and foremost, is to be where a body of believers gathers as the Eucharistic assembly to worship God. The church is not there to first and foremost maintain some cultural customs.
I don't know what the Greek version of wooden shoes is, but kind of sounds like burning them.
Number five, a change of mindset is necessary on how the church leadership and how members view the church itself and their roles in it.
A change of mindset is awfully vague.
If we are truly worshiping and communing with the Holy Trinity, preaching and teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, and being of service and help to those in their times of need and distress, this is not a segmented part of our lives. This is who we are called to be 24/7.
And I can imagine any evangelical, conservative Protestant saying exactly that.
The bottom line is this. A strategic planning committee or feasibility plan is not going to solve the crises of rapid decline in the Orthodox Church. The activity of the Holy Spirit will transform Orthodox if only they want it. If people and their churches become people of prayer, then the churches will grow. If they don't, then it...
I've read so many, almost the exact same statements coming out of denominational people in the Christian Reformed Church over the last 30 years. Amazing.
Will be business as usual. Perhaps Panayotu's observation...
But they got cool buildings. Not that it's my taste in buildings. Sorry.
...of things...
I should say something about that, because, you know, I talked to Jonathan after the St. Andrews thing, and I told Jonathan that when I go into a building like that with Jonathan... And Jonathan starts sort of pointing out how it all works. Then it's like, I get this. I understand this. This is pretty cool. But when others sort of are bragging on things, I've seen a lot of pastors brag on their stuff in a building, and I find it pretty distasteful.
Orthodox churches could do, which will lead them to grow, or not do, causing them to shrink, gives some insight into what's happening in Orthodoxy today.
And again, I think this goes far beyond just Orthodoxy. I think this is much more this strange mixture of gentle slope, steep slope that we're wrestling with. So I found this a super interesting video because of that point. Because once you have them in, and Burge is right, it's churches have a far easier time retaining people, and especially, let's say, an ethnic church like the Greek Orthodox that has all of that culture, just like the Christian Reformed Church with the weeping at Synod this year. You have all that momentum, you have all those forces that sort of keeps it together, especially when it's an ethnic church. But how then does it work? So the Orthodox in America have a little bit easier, yet they have to, in some ways, navigate. They don't have an inherited American culture. They have to have sort of a specifically religious culture. So that's a whole nother animal. So, boy, the comments on this are going to be interesting. So let me know what you think.